7th Avenue Pizza, the official pizza of the Soda Pod.
The Soda Pod, the official beer and hockey podcast of 7th Avenue Pizza.
Segment number two here at MNCAA. Nick Maxson back with you on this segment. Wasn't with you guys for the Big Ten crew. As you can probably hear in my voice, it's not at 100%. We are joined by somebody who always brings his A game, Max Veach, to talk all things NCHC Bulldogs. And there's plenty to talk about this week, Max. But first, before we get into it, how have things been for you?
Pretty good. To say that I bring the best every week is far too kind and an outright lie if we're going to be straight up with everybody. But I'm sure they've already got that in their minds before I had to bring it up. So happy to be here regardless.
Oh, boy. I'm trying not to laugh too much because, the voice is still recovering. For those who don't know, I'm definitely not definitely filled in the pipes this week, and actually still went up and called games in North Dakota, and trying to call games while sipping on a cough drop and having to hit the mute button every 30 seconds is not ideal. And neither is the transfer portal right now, Max.
Yes.
And, this is something that we've talked about the last couple of off seasons. Now we still really don't know how things are going to shake out. This is the last year, the extra COVID eligibility for those who, essentially we're fresh and back in the start of the 2020-21 season. Yep. But by the looks of it, Max, it sounds like this is a runaway train that isn't stopping regardless of whether these players have a COVID year next year or not. It feels like that the transfer portal is going to become almost like free agency central here over these next few years.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I think this year probably will be our peak of the total players, just because there are more eligible players right now than there probably will be next year, given those extra years of eligibility. That's kind of how math works. So by a total player standpoint, I think this will be another record and probably the peak of what we see in the transfer portal. But I don't by any means expect it to go away unless there's some sort of rule changes with how it's managed. And it is a free agency, and much like free agency, there in any sport, there are markets that are much more attractive to certain players, whether that be from a historical prominence standpoint or a just flat out relative location standpoint. I know it's not technically pay for play yet, but once we start getting into NIL money, if we start seeing a huge output in the hockey region, then we start getting into does taxes matter in college athletics now, which is an insane thing I never thought I would be saying. And I have been on the side that players should be able to get paid for certain things. There's a dark side to that as well. So we've seen it a lot in the CCHA right now, just, and maybe I'm just more exposed to it with, group chats and talking to other people from the CCHA in Minnesota and outside as well. But it seems like some of those smaller schools are getting picked apart, whether intentionally or unintentionally from some stuff that's happening internally there. And it seems like they're looking to travel elsewhere, whether it be to, one of the bigger schools taking a step up or get more ice time somewhere else. But it's seeming a lot like there's some smaller programs that have some things to figure out in terms of getting people to stick around.
Yeah, and the NIL money is definitely something that continues to evolve. And it's funny because in the NCAA eligibility rulebook, and this actually has a bit of relevance to us this week, Max. Yep. We're going to talk a little bit of Huskies, a little bit of Bulldogs, and then kind of break down what Denver has done to get themselves back to St. Paul, another opportunity to win a national championship. But back to the eligibility part of it, it's interesting how there's so much detail involved in terms of being an amateur status and not playing a game or not signing a contract or even taking gifts for recruiting, and a lot of attention being played essentially in that rule book to like major junior hockey in Canada, right? And supposedly the biggest news coming out of this whole debacle was with St. Cloud State, Lubomir Kupko, who essentially had a season-ending injury that forced him to essentially leave the Buccaneers. He's back home in Europe. Apparently, multiple sources have told the Rink Live that he played a professional game. I believe it was sometime between 21 and 22. Now, if that is indeed true, that would make him NCAA ineligible. Not sure how that is confirmed or if it is or not, something we have to see. But if that is indeed true, that's another recruit loss for St. Cloud State. And, you know, as much as I think there's a lot of attention paid, especially to those in the U.S. and maybe even Canada who are, you know, their path is college hockey, so sure that everybody across the Atlantic has maybe necessarily the same information on this. Again, I'm not saying that he didn't know or shouldn't have known. I don't think that's the debate. But again, it just goes to show you that with NIL and then playing professional, you know, there's ways that you can harm your potential future in NCAA hockey.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that all kind of shakes out, because I'm not saying this happens where he's at, but there are other leagues where there's players that get paid in cash and there's really no paper trail. So even if some videos or pictures or, you know, evidence surfaces that he did ultimately play in a game there, which I'm shocked that that hasn't already been confirmed or denied. It seems like that would be pretty easy, but there's plenty of witnesses there on both sides of the ice to answer questions. But even if it was proven that he did play there, I don't know the fine legal language. I'm not a big reader. I mean, it's still going to shock a ton of people, but specifically a reader of legal handbooks and languages as dry as the NCAA is. But if he wasn't paid for that game, does that still make him ineligible, or is that just
based on what I read, it states at both parts, it says sign a contract or play a professional game. So it does sort of, at least in my mind, cover exactly what you're describing, sort of that under the table kind of cash thing. So essentially, if you participated in a professional environment, that would make you deemed ineligible, because essentially at that point, you're not an amateur athlete, which, what is that in the NCAA anymore, right? So it's just...
Right, yeah. And how does that work with things like the Beauty League in terms of local guys that want to go skate there?
I think so funny you asked that, because the Beauty League is, I think it's honed as a charity event, because I think all the ticket sales actually go to charity, so they're not profiting off of that.
Correct, but want that to end, by the way. I'm not saying people should not go skate there. I just didn't know how that worked.
But it is kind of funny you mentioned that, though, because, you know, how does, you know, that fine language, you know, constitute? How does the NCAA see that, right? It's just, it's bizarre, right? What isn't bizarre, and a topic we've been covering pretty much here and there throughout the season, is Miami, right? We had a feeling that there was a coaching change on the horizon, potentially after the end of the year. Now, mind you, they started off really good. Their non-conference schedule was, 4-2, I think? They hit conference play. And let's just say the wheels came off and it wasn't even close. So Miami did indeed make a hire this afternoon here. And mind you, we're recording this on the first here. And they hired the coach out of Tri-City Storm. I'm trying to pull up the coach here. Yep, it's Anthony Noreen, who is going to be taking over at the helm. And this is significant, Max, because when you look at their roster, I've got to pull it up right here. You got a guy like Owen Beckner, has got a Colorado College recruit. He's actually a draft pick of the Senators, right? There's a guy, a Cambrier, going to Nebraska, Omaha. Mind you, these are commits, right? Michigan State, Vermont, was Western Michigan, North Dakota, Minnesota, Arizona State now, which is now an NCHC school, is in there, right? So there is a bunch of talent on this roster, and more so it's NCHC level talent, right? And just sort of the same idea, right? Where Adam Nightingale, when he took over with Michigan State, right? A lot of connections with the development team. Yes, I didn't mean to poke fun at that connection. And I know football Bulldogs fans, they know exactly where I'm going with this. But no doubt with that sort of talent level, and more so, can he sell the Miami program? That's going to be the next toughest bit, Max. Just your initial reaction to the hire by the University of Miami on a guy that looks like he has a pretty good resume to back it up.
I thought you were going a different way when you said looks there, because I'd say he's probably the number one looks guy in terms of coaches in the NCHC. It was a one A race, or sorry, it was a one and then a large gap race with David Carl at the top now. But it looks like there's a little bit more competition here with Anthony Noreen coming in. Certainly the best hair in the NCHC before he even coaches a game. So there's that, but. As far as things that actually matter in college hockey, what you were talking about there, the connections with some of those development programs, specifically Tri-City there, I think he will be able to sway some of the kids that were on the fence or were, you know, promised a spot but not guaranteed, you know, ice time or any of that at Miami. They're obviously familiar with him. And, you know, if they liked him, and it seems like he's a likable guy just based on the few small short articles I've taken a look at so far, I think he will be able to flip, you know, one, two, maybe even three of those guys, just given how some of these other programs are set up right now. But past that first 2 years, I think once you get out of the time frame of having actually coached some of these guys, you're just relying on word of mouth and, you know, some of the people that he does get to go there. To be talking to former teammates, whether that be high school or other junior places or wherever it might be. So it'll be the first, you know, 2-3 years where he's going to have a little bit of reputation where people actually know him. And then past that, it's going to be a, what have you proved in those 2 or 3 years to gain new commitments that really don't have a connection to you outside of that overall. So I think he will have a leg up over some, you know, other coaching hires that might be coming from, you know, other programs that were mediocre or whatever. But it's going to be one of those things where it's not a steep learning curve, but you have to prove yourself quickly in order to continue getting benefits like that.
And mind you, his coaching resume, pretty lengthy too. Coached three years at Wisconsin Stevens Point, which is a Division III program, all as an assistant coach. Then went to Youngstown. So this is where he entered into the USHL in 2010 and then became GM head coach the following year, was in Youngstown until 2014, 2015, then went to the ECHL for two seasons for the Orlando Solar Bears, and then came over to Tri-City 2017, 2018, has been there ever since. He's also spent time as an assistant coach with the World Junior team and the U19s three different times, and then 2022-23 head coach of the Hlinka Gorinski Cup of the U.S. U18 squad. So the resume is there, Max. And to your mention, I think if there's one thing that we've seen from the transfer portal, first of all, almost the entire roster in Northern Michigan's there. We're going to touch down that with our CCHA crew. Pretty bad. Yeah. There's some work for Grant Patoli to do over there in Michigan. But one thing you don't see is Miami, right? And this is interesting to me because just last year when Minnesota State made the change with Mike Hastings and then had to go out and get Luke Strand, if anything, yeah, there was some turnover there with players following coaches. But Luke Strand hit the ground running immediately, and we started seeing commitments to Minnesota State as early as late that summer. And I would imagine, Max, to just to kind of wrap this topic up, that if you're Miami, you would think that, I mean, you're not going to get the same number as, shall we say, Luke Strand, but I do think you want to leave your mark pretty early on. You do want to get some names going to your program.
Yeah, for sure. I would say, you know, hockey, surprisingly to absolutely nobody, not as big in Ohio as it is in Minnesota. So the people that want to play in their home state, even if it's not their local school, going to be significantly less. So you're not going to get some of those borderline or you know, people sitting on the fence commitments that ultimately fall to your side because of that, you know, proximity relation there. But I don't think it's something that's out of the realm of possibilities that with all of these older connections, you might see, you know, people coming from some of these other teams that have had a previous connection with him and have liked the way that he coaches. And, you know, they thought that they were going to be in a good spot at some of these other established college organizations that make that jump as well. So, I would say that it's going to be really interesting to see how it pans out, but there's going to need to be some movement pretty quickly if he wants to make up some ground in a league like, or in a conference like the NCHC, especially with Arizona State coming in as that additional member.
100%. Max, let's get a little closer to home. Duluth, today was also a big day. And surprisingly, a lot of more serious news happening on April Fool's Day. And kind of tough at which times.
Strange,
really,
yeah.
Really, you know, almost like you have to do a double take in some of these, right? UMD, the Bulldogs, did hold their season-ending press conference. And let's just say a lot of this was sort of expected, right? Coach Sandlin verbally expressing his frustrations with the season. Also, in line with what we've been saying is, hey, we've got some really good players coming in. So, you know, hang on to your hats. But he also mentioned something about the game as a whole, Max. And this is where I think when I talked to him at media day last season, he was even echoing this from the off-season meetings for college hockey. Then it continues to be a conversation point now. Your reaction to some of Scott Sandlin's tidbits from his season-ending press conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's not, I don't know how to say it lightly, so I'm just going to say it. No, he's not an idiot. Like, he knows how the fans feel. He knows how the team feels. He knows how everybody that's kind of connected to, whether loosely or not, connected to the program feels. Like, it was a bit of a disappointing season in a lot of ways. That being said, he's really excited, much like many of the fan base, about incoming people. So there's a lot of, you know, mirroring sentiments between the fan base and coaches, and I think that says a lot about him as a coach. He's not, you know, head in the sands, you know, trying to make excuses, this, that, or the other thing. He's well aware of everything, and that's what I think makes him a good coach and makes him somebody that's going to have longevity through times like this. So I've got no qualms with him saying some of the things that he said about the season that we've had here. I'm not, no qualms about him being excited and trying to focus on new incoming recruits. I think you have to do that after the season. But I totally agree with him on what he said about the transfer portal as well. As good as it is for, you know, some schools, and I would say that anybody in the Big Ten that's flaunting private jets or anybody that's got some of these private school funds and incredible facilities and this, that, and the other thing, they're reaping the benefits of the transfer portal. But for a team like UMD, they've got history, they've got Minnesota recruits, and they've got a couple other things where they get a little bit more than some of the bottom of the barrel teams as far as attractiveness goes. But they lose recruits left and right too, and it's a tough situation to be put in as a coach who started well before this and played well before this. Not, no offense to Sandlin or anybody else in terms of age, but it's just a different world that we're living in right now, and trying to figure out the transfer portal stuff on the fly when you don't necessarily agree with it has got to be frustrating. And I think he's handling it as about as good as you could for a coach in that position. So I fault him 0% for anything that he said. If it offends anybody, and if it did offend you, I don't know, take a second look in the mirror and try and put yourself in his shoes or any of these other shoes. Like we mentioned Northern Michigan, that's an incredibly tough position to be in, or some of these service academies that are losing kids after 2 years, or, you know, many other reasons why kids are transferring out, given the additional freedom that they've got. And so I think he echoed what people are saying to wrap it all up here pretty well, and kind of gives me and many others a lot more confidence with what we're going to see moving forward still.
Yeah, there's definitely some conversations to be had, right? Because there's a lot of small schools that are being, you know, shall I say, more impacted year on year. I think that's the bigger thing, right? Is, yeah, you know, they spend time and resources to get these players in, and then without really, you know, any sort of warning sometimes, or maybe if, you know, in the CCHA, there's plenty of warning, who knows, depending on which team you're talking about. These kids have essentially the ability to move different programs, right? I don't know what the balance is. I don't know if there is a perfect answer for that, but it seems to, as we sit right now, be more impacting in a negative sense the smaller schools over, like you said, the larger schools who have more of those resources, Max. Speaking of resources, and how about national championship hardware, Denver, last topic. Again, have made it to the dance party, Max. A bit of a scare too in the regionals, but for Denver, I don't know if I'm surprised, but what was maybe catching some of the national media off guard was Denver. I think when people look at the Pioneers and they say, well, this team is skill up and down their lineup, which they do have skill. They've got good goaltending. They can move the puck. They can score. This is the team that, you know, is going to kind of win by that. That wasn't the case these two games in the regionals. It was more of a lockdown. You know, let's make sure we play smart hockey. And if we have to win it low scoring, we can do that. That's exactly what we saw with these Pioneers. And in doing so, they got themselves a ticket punched to St. Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say coming into this postseason, the NCAA tournament, I had an image of Denver in my head, like you just laid out there, a skill team that likes to score and they have to put up big numbers to win games. And that's not at all what happened in either of their games here. Matt Davis had picked a hell of a time to have his best two games of the year, especially that first one, making 46 of 47 saves, a couple of them incredible, like, you know, sprawl out and just bat it out of the air out of nowhere. And the same thing with the, you know, a game-winning save, what it turned out to be in the Cornell game as well. And that was a much lower scoring game, and that was wildly different than Denver's played all year. I think they only had 18 shots at the end of that game and gave up 25. So it was a really low output, you know, hard-fought battle, middle of the ice. You're just trying to find your footing one way or the other there. And that hasn't been how Denver has won this year. But they've won like that in the past. So, you know, maybe some of the older guys are relying on what they've done, you know, two years ago, we'll say, I don't want to say 3 years ago, but 2 years ago for sure. And they had a great goaltender back there that they relied on as well, and Magnus Crona before Matt Davis showed up here. So, or got his opportunity. I guess he was on those teams as well. But regardless, I'm getting off topic. I would say that they're proving that they can win in any format, and that says a lot about the coaching and David Carl and what he's been able to do there, as well as the team's resolve. I mean, they've gone through this last whole stretch of almost 2 months now of not having Rizzo in the lineup, and they're still finding ways to win draws, and when they don't win draws, they're winning battles to pucks and winning races, and they've got a compete level that is just second to none right now, and that's got to scare you if you're one of the more talented teams that, you know, Denver has the talent to keep up with you, and they're playing a much more physical and, you know, intimidating game when they need to. So I would say, obviously, they were one of the favorites to make it there. But of the top four teams, I would say that they were probably the least picked. And I would have to look at the numbers online to see that. In terms of making it to the Frozen Four, I personally put them there because, you know, I'm a genius that knows no bounds of humility. But I think that has more to do with them being in the NCHC, being familiar with them, and just having, you know, faced a team that's knocked my team out of the playoffs in one way or another for a couple of years in a row. So others haven't had that opportunity to see that side of Denver, and it's just more of the same. I think they've got a really good shot moving forward, even without, you know, a Mike Richter award finalist, or without the top scorer in the league, or the top line. They don't have that speed or that freshman line of BC, but they've got a complete team that can play any style that they need to, as long as they're ready for it.
100%. And I was going to say they played a patient game over these last two. I think, and you know, you mentioned 2022. That to me is almost a perfect comparison, because they had to be patient against Minnesota State. And then when, shall we say, there was a little crack in the armor, they took advantage of it. So very similar in terms of how they approached these last two, which is how won them their latest national championship just a couple of years ago. Max, real quick, we have two NCHC teams that also played in the tournament but did not advance to the Final Four. So three total, but two did not survive. We've covered one. North Dakota, unable to take care of business against Michigan State.
Yep.
Right? Yep.
No, nope, Michigan.
Right. No, Michigan, right. Michigan was Michigan State.
Western Michigan, Michigan State, and Omaha, Minnesota.
I forgot about Western Michigan. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yep. So... North Dakota, that's a team that definitely, for lack of a better term, needed to outscore their opponents. And defensively, this was something that we thought we would see more of through the regular season, with turning over their entire defensive core. That team looked all sorts of like discombobulated in their game, that took them out of the regional playoffs.
Yeah, losing 3-4, and you know, all of these games with the NCHC teams, they were all one goal games. Two of them went to overtime of the five. Like, they were all incredible games, and you know, they only have Denver going to the Frozen Four, and only got Denver with any wins of any of them. But I would say, regardless, they still showed out, and it was you know, good for the conference overall. It was no blowouts. There was no times where they looked outmatched or anything like that. But yeah, as far as North Dakota goes, it was a great season with what's probably a sour finish for a couple of players. Certainly a number of fans online that are spewing a heck of a lot of nonsense. Yeah, but well, I don't want to say that all North Dakota fans are crazy lunatics that don't have a basis of what normal hockey is like. But to say that your coach is the reason that you're not winning these incredibly close and hard-fought games is insane. We're talking about teams that are at the top of college hockey as a whole, and you're losing by one goal and thinking the world is ending. That's banana land. Like, you need a little bit of common sense to see like a bounce goes away or a call goes away, or like any one of these things can happen and it leads to a total collapse or you know, a loss. And that's all that it really is. And I think any of the players that have played for that guy will be the first ones to say that Bubs is awesome, and you know, they would go back and do it all again. And I think you have to listen to that a little bit. So yeah, they left period one, period two with leads and just kind of collapsed in that third. Michigan came out and just throttled them the first couple of minutes there, and it felt like they were in panic mode after that. We've seen them this season come back and, you know, win games late. They just didn't have enough juice left in the tank this time, didn't have any magic, didn't have any of the last minute miracles left in the bag of tricks there. And you know, Ludwig Persson came back and had a couple of what do you want to call them, goals he wished that he had back. They were a little bit light or fluky or whatever, and that's to be expected with a goalie that's coming back after having been out for a little while as well. So it was really exciting to see him there. I think the hopes got up, and the expectations got raised with having him back between the posts there, but it was a tough return to the ice for him there. Jackson Blake was great, just wasn't enough for North Dakota.
Nope. And then Western Michigan, Michigan State beating Western Michigan. Oh, that was a really tight hockey game as well.
Yes.
That really could have gone either way, honestly.
Well, yeah. Broncos leading 4-2 going into the third period. They had to feel great. And then it was just, they let one go in, and then that last one with less than a minute left. As soon as that happened, it was all air, all wind was out of their sails, and it was just a matter of time before Sparty finished that one off. I feel like everybody in the building kind of knew it, and watching on TV, everybody I was with felt the same way. They're just like, we're waiting for this one to end, because it's really kind of deflating when you, and it's a two goal lead, and that's, you know, that's the biggest joke in hockey that people say it's the worst lead, but it's one of those things where it's, you do feel the wind come out on certain goals and in certain time frames, and that was one of them where it was just like it's bound to happen. And Michigan State, great team, great season. I think they deserved that win. I think they were probably the better team at points. Western Michigan was better team at points. It was very even. Obviously they went into overtime. Michigan State just found a way to do it at the end when it mattered.
And then Omaha, Minnesota. And this one, if you're Omaha fans, you probably sick to your stomach, because at least from my perspective, Max, I watched that game from start to finish. To me, Omaha was the better team in that hockey game. And the difference was Minnesota just capitalizes on three turnovers from the Mavericks and just really poor areas of the ice. And I mean, Minnesota really organically wasn't generating that many great scores by themselves. I thought Omaha played one hell of a hockey game. It just, this is where, and we talk about this, right, Max, and then these types of games, this is where your mistakes become magnified. Unfortunately, that seemed to be the Achilles heel for the Mavericks in their loss to the Gophers.
Yeah, I mean, you slip on the ice and turn the puck over, what turns out to be the game-winning goal near the end of the game, there's a tough way to go out. It's not ideal. I would say holding two different leads in the game, playing a really tight first period, and then kind of getting a little bit looser and playing a game that you're familiar with was, like you said, going in Omaha's favor, and they look like the better team there. But Jackson Nelson, you know, the old Gopher, been there forever, just had more in the tank. He played like it was his last game, and almost was, but turns out that it was enough to win that one, and that's what mattered at the time. So tough to see Omaha go out like that after such an incredible finish to the season. One of the hottest teams in hockey the second half of the year. Nobody really wanted to face them. I think many Minnesota fans were feeling like, you know, they kind of got a pretty tough 3 seed matched up against them. So it was not one that anybody was comfortable with. It was a fun watch. Like I said, Omaha's got a lot to be proud of this year. Just wasn't their night.
It really wasn't. Gophers would go on to lose in the regional final against Boston University. So, unfortunately, this for our last point before we head over to our CCHA folks, Max, the last three Frozen Fours that were in St. Paul had a winner from the state of hockey. That will not be the same this year. However, the NCHC, after a 1 year, shall we say, vacation from having a team in the Frozen Four Denver, back into a four to represent our conference here. So while my voice is slowly degrading, let's go ahead and kick on over to our CCHA voice. That's our last segment here coming up on MNCAA.